Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham, both pastors of Christchurch Haywards Heath. None of us know when the Lord might call us home. It's a piece of theory that we know to be true, but every so often that theory becomes a lot more concrete. Today we have testimony from Joel Upton relating to May 28th, 2020, when at the age of 32, his heart stopped beating.
Hello, my name is Graham Nichols.
And I'm Mark Bentham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Today we are welcoming one of our behind the scenes, I would say, staff members.
Ooh, I like that. Count. Staff yeah. Member. It's like we've got a really big team now. I love it.
Yeah, we've got a team. I'm going to make myself the MD and you can all be my staff members.
Okay.
And Joel is one of them. Joel Upton is with us today. Say hello, Joel, so we can hear your voice.
Hello, beautiful people. How are you?
They can't answer you. First mistake. Joel Upton is with us today because he's got
referring to us as the beautiful people.
Were you? Oh, did you mean us, Joel?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Oh, sorry, mate. Sorry.
We can respond, Josh. That's my
sort of people I can see.
We are talking to Joel today because Joel has had a very interesting, turbulent couple of months, I would say, an experience that is, I don't know, worth talking about, we feel like, and worth exploring. And I'm not going to tell you about it. I'm going to let Joel tell you about it. So we'll kind of go through this, letting Joel explain exactly what happened and probably bring in Graham as well, who happened to be around for some of this event, this kind of experience that Joel's going to talk about. So Joel, first of all, can you just give us a little bit of context? So your your age and I guess like what you like to do, what your work is, stuff like that.
Yeah, so my name is Joel. I live in Haywards Heath. I am 32 years old and I work for a local print company as in marketing, basically.
And you you're a member at Christchurch?
I am, yes. Yeah, so I go there with Alexa, my wife, and our four children.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about what happened a couple months back.
Yeah, so was it 4 days after my 32nd birthday, I got up in the morning and we were going to have a day on the beach. So I was just going downstairs to kind of make the kids breakfast. And what I'm told is my heart decided to stop working properly. Basically, the electrics in it went a bit crazy and I collapsed and, yeah, my heart stopped. So Alexa heard me fall over, rushed down the stairs and started to perform CPR on me. And yeah, then a paramedic arrived, first responder arrived, and they basically stabilized me. They shocked me with a defibrillator, brought me back, stabilized me, and took me off to Brighton Hospital. But yeah, I don't remember any of that at all. Like, the last thing I remember is going to bed, and then that was it. And then I woke up in the hospital. Graham knows a little bit more because he was.
Yeah, he was present. Also, yeah. Also, can I ask a couple clarifying questions though before we get going involved? So you say you don't remember anything except going to bed. So you don't even remember the morning before the heart stopped.
I don't. So literally, yeah, I remember going to sleep and that was it. And then Roxy, our youngest daughter, keeps telling me that I fell off the back of a chair. So trying to piece things together, and that basically I think I was leaning against a chair and then fell over. So she kind of watched it all, and she's the one that tells us all about it.
Okay. And so, yeah, Graham, you can fill us in. So you were, Mark said, the fourth emergency service who showed up to save the day pretty early on. So what, from your perspective, what was going on that morning?
Yeah, I think what happened was Alexa started performing CPR. She came downstairs, started performing CPR, which was really amazing that she had that sort of ability and could sort of step in and do that. But she called the ambulance. I can't remember whether precisely before or after starting CPR, but anyway, called the ambulance in that process and they were just arriving. So she called us as well. This is me and Caroline, my wife, because we're about 2 minutes away geographically. So I was actually having a bit of a lie-in.
And goodness sake, Joel, so selfish.
Sorry, Graham.
Literally we were both in bed and half asleep, and this phone sort of comes in, Alexa, and, you know, it could have been anything, but thankfully Caroline picked it up. And, you know, Alexa said, can you come quick? So I'm like literally getting dressed, walking down the stairs, running out the door, trying to put my t-shirt on, running up the slope. And Caroline sort of trailing behind because she's not as fast as me. And so, yeah, came in the door, and the scene was paramedic working on Joel. He was lying flat out on his back in the lounge at a sort of jaunty angle, looking very, very unwell. And the paramedics had pushed Alexa out because it was very serious, I think. So didn't want her in the room. So she's sort of halfway up the stairs. The children had all really rather responsibly sorted themselves out. They were in the front bedroom. So our job was mostly to look after the children and sort of comfort Alexa, prayed with Alexa, sort of halfway up the stairs, which is all a bit bizarre, while these sort of strange noises were happening downstairs and the kids were sort of, you know, chuckling away upstairs. Like children do, you know. The kids weren't in a crisis. They were sort of reading books and jumping on beds and, right, you know, sort of stuff like that. So that was that bit. I don't know if you want me to fill in some other bits that Joel might not know.
Yeah, for sure. I just want to, like, Joel, how is it like? I've got two questions quickly for Joel. Like, one, just give us any, had you had any history of like illness personally, or is there a history of this kind of thing in your family? And secondly, how is it for you just like hearing that story from Graham? Because like, even for me, it makes me sweat even hearing it back, and it wasn't me. Do you know what I mean? Like, how is that hearing it for you?
Yeah. So yeah, there's no history of anything. I'm fit and healthy as far as we know, rather than this event, but yeah, previously there was nothing like that. But yeah, listening back to these things, it's quite strange. I keep asking Alexa lots of questions about it. Mm-hmm.
Does it scare you to hear it back like that?
Yeah, it unsettles me a bit just because I was just completely unaware of it. And it does, I feel a bit bad for everyone else that kind of went through it, because I woke up in a hospital and I felt quite fine when I woke up. Whereas everybody else has gone through this traumatic experience, which I went through as well, but I don't remember it. So it's quite a weird feeling. It does feel a little bit like people are talking about somebody else.
Mm.
I wish someone had got photos.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
Do you know what, Joel? I actually thought about it, but I thought it was a bit weird, you know, because I came in the lounge before I was sort of bustled out and up the stairs. I sort of came in the lounge just to see, because I didn't even know where to go when I came in the house. The front door was just open, so I just came in. And, I thought about taking a photo and I thought, no, that's a bit voyeuristic, a bit kind of weird. So I didn't, but maybe it would have been good just to record it as a fact. That was probably the lowest
point. I don't know, there's some things that you probably don't want to see. Actually,
no, well, that's the thought that went through my mind. But, you know, just to even better sort of retell the story, it might have been useful with hindsight. But I think that was the lowest point, because I think at this point you weren't revived. So, you know, it was pretty desperate. I think at that point either you weren't breathing or you were having to have assistance for breathing, which continued for quite a long time. And there was lots of sort of mechanical, hospital-y kind of noises going on. So there's this kind of ventilator thing that's pulsing, and then obviously you've got the classic noise of the defibrillator. And there's only one guy for quite a long time, just one paramedic, before lots of other people arrived. So it did seem very, very serious at that point.
And Joel, like, I don't know, I mean, this is just a question from naivety really, but like, I don't know what the definition of to die actually is, but your heart stopped, and I assume, you know, at times at least you weren't breathing. So does that mean that in fact at some point you did die, you were dead? And that kind of moves me on to a question about out-of-body experiences, which has been a fascinating topic even among Christians. Like, I've listened to quite a lot of podcasts where the topic of out-of-body stuff comes up, because there's definitely stories where people have said they left their body after cardiac arrest or whatever and experienced some kind of spiritual reality, or the idea of conversing with God or seeing angels, or, you know, the common story of going towards the light sort of thing. And they've gone on to sort of preach evangelically about that as a kind of proof that there is something after death, which has, you know, been received variously. What was your experience? Did anything like that happen, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, so one of the first kind of feelings I felt was just this real massive sense of peace and just comfort, and I kind of felt just ready. Like,
when was that? When was that happening? That feeling.
It felt like just before I woke up in hospital. So,
okay,
I just kind of felt ready to, like, almost die. Really ready to let go, and I did feel this sense of being kind of in the presence of God, in Jesus' presence, and I just felt kind of the words "not yet," and then that was just before I woke up. Just this, these words "not yet," and that kind of stuck with me quite throughout my time in hospital and stuff. That
wow.
That feeling that that I was kind of, that I felt just, I did feel ready to die, but that I had this purpose that I felt that God was saying, like, "not yet," and then I wake up. So
that's fascinating. So it wasn't just a complete blank, just a complete nothing, then I'm awake. You talk about feeling something in that period of blank.
Yeah. So, well, only at the end. So immediately after that sense of feeling this "not yet," that's when I woke up, and that's when I saw the blue curtains around me, and I was in the hospital bed. And then the next moment I was on a video call to Alexa. So, I spent another 2 weeks in hospital after that, just thinking about that "not yet" and realizing that, you know, God could have called me home at that point, but he chose not to. So that really makes you start to feel like you do have, well, a purpose for being here every single day that God allows us to live.
Just to fill in for other people, just so they can imagine the situation. You were worked on for quite a while. Lots of ambulances arrived. Eventually, you went to hospital. So we're on a Thursday, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think. When was it you sort of woke up and had these experiences?
So that was Saturday.
Yeah, so I thought it was. So people can imagine, this was 2 days later, not like half an hour later.
Yeah, so, yeah, Alexa's kept a little diary that I can see they did lots of work on me in those 2 days. But, yeah, towards the end of Saturday evening is when I kind of came round.
So that's like, I want to talk more about how that experience of the "not yet" affected you and how that changed your perspective or affected you afterwards. But like, just to bring us into the moment again, so what was that moment like when you did wake up? I'm sure there was just a ton of confusion and like, what's happened, why am I here?
Yeah, so it's you kind of wake up slowly, so you're kind of in and out for a little bit, but the clearest memory I have is having this kind of WhatsApp video conversation with Alexa on a nurse's phone. And I just quite clearly remember the phone had one of those notches at the top. I just remember focusing on that quite a bit, but I don't know why, but that kind of caught my attention, and just talking to Alexa. And then
you didn't like the design of the phone.
Yeah, it wasn't an iPhone, that's for sure. So then talking to Alexa, I don't really remember our conversation, but I just remember she was kind of looking at me happy, but tearful.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then I remember being just wheeled off to a new ward. So I think I was in and out of that stage. I don't think it was happening in that sequence, but it just felt like it to me that it was happening in that sequence. I kind of remember a couple of procedures. I remember them pulling out a catheter.
Ooh.
Which is not a pleasant experience.
Mm-hmm. That's one you don't want to remember.
Yeah, I think I was still quite dazed.
Did you get a video or photo of that?
Let's hope not. This is where Graham wasn't present.
Yeah, for making it for his documentary, his Joel documentary. Okay,
I remember seeing I have a cut across my forehead, and I was focusing quite a lot on that because I could see myself in the video camera as well, and I was talking to Alexa.
Yeah, which happened because you hit your head when you fell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in the sort of preceding days, then, I suppose you stayed in hospital for quite a lot longer than
I was there 12 days in total.
Yeah.
While they did a bunch of tests, they every test they kept doing was turning up negative. So so I was going through all sorts of tests, CT scans, MRIs. So they didn't really know what caused it or whether it happened again or anything.
And so how did that sort of, so, because obviously us, from our perspective as a church family and as your friends, like, I was just continuing to ask why, what happened? Like, why did this happen? How can it be avoided again? What goes on? And I assume to this point, we still don't have a clear picture of exactly why this happened, right? Which is that frustrating? Does that worry you? Like, where does that put you?
So I don't feel that frustrated by it. The whole experience was just wrapped in this peace that I've never felt before. This kind of unwavering peace. Whatever the kind of doctors told me, I was just like, just accepting of it. I just, because of that experience I had of the not yet, I just felt the sovereignty of God so powerfully. I felt whatever happens. It's all in God's control. So, and I knew that God was using the doctors to make me better. He used the paramedics. He used Alexa to keep me alive. And so that it was just this sense of peace. So yeah, even when they didn't really know what was wrong or I was going through all these tests, I just kind of just rolled with it, I guess, in a sense. I guess my personality I don't need to always know everything that's going on. So Alexa's a bit different to me, and I know Graham is one of those people as well that needs to have every detail behind everything. So yeah, when I was talking to the doctors, I would occasionally have Alexa on the phone and she'd be asking lots of questions, whereas I'd just be quite accepting of what they're telling me.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think laid back is the colloquial term for Joel's character. And
that's one way.
And much, much too not laid back is the definition of mine. So, yeah. And in certain contexts, being laid back is very beneficial, as we can see. Particularly where there isn't an answer. I think where there's a simple medical question answer, you know, asking is good. I think in Joel's case, it's actually really good characteristic to be able to accept uncertainty and not have the answers. I think it's a really good spiritual characteristic. So so laid backness, you know, is in the right context, is very is very spiritually mature, in that we all need to be laid back when there are things that we don't know the answer to, I think.
Yes, able to relinquish control or the need to control or understand, right, and leave that with God. And I feel like, I guess that is part of your character, you know, before this whole thing happened. But I suppose that kind of not yet experience also backed up in the sense that you just thought, I just trust that God has got this in control and his plan is going to work out no matter what. So why do I need to worry about it? Is that kind of where you're at?
Yeah, definitely. So, so that was definitely what was kind of driving me and really was behind that. I mean, every time I kind of would think about it, and like, I'm not really a tearful person, but it would start to make me emotional and stuff, just to think about that Jesus really had his hand in the whole thing, and that he met with me, and that he cared enough to meet with me and to tell me that, you know, you're going to be okay, not yet. And to me, I never felt like that not yet was, that meant I would be, or I'd get out of hospital, right? I just felt like it was not yet for that moment. I mean, the next day could have been a different day, and I was accepting of that, you know, the next day I could die and go to be with God. But yeah, that peace just never left me.
Did that peace also transcend? Because there's a sense, isn't there, where we can have a peace for ourselves and how we are. How is that working out in terms of your concerns for Alexa, for the children, for you know, just the family at this point? Was that able to think in those kind of ways, or were at that point it was just the immediate, as it were?
Yeah, so I mean, I was definitely concerned for the family at home. But again, I knew that they would be looked after. I knew that God had them, that he had them in his plan and in his control as well. So that sense did kind of carry on to them, and there's been lots of questions about whether this can happen to the kids as well. As a problem that, yeah, hereditary problem. So, yeah, so there is, I am having to, yeah, keep going back to this, you know, reminding myself of what I felt then, that God has got this in control, that the kids are going to be fine. God is the only person that can give and take away life. So yeah, I just have to keep reminding myself of that. I mean, any moment, I didn't think that 4 days after my 32nd birthday, I was going to have a heart attack or a cardiac arrest. And so at any moment, any of us can receive that phone call or happen to us that, you know, so we're not in control.
And how's it changed you? In terms of, how's it changed your relationship with God? How's it changed your relationship with Alexa, with the kids? How's it changed you in terms of just your walk day by day?
So it's been a battle. Again, once you have that experience, you're really in the moment, and then you come home and you come back to kind of normal life and everything just returns to normal, especially like Graham was saying with kids, they just move on really quickly. So other than Roxy saying, she looks at me quite funny sometimes and talks about the box in my side, which we haven't mentioned yet. So my walk with God, I think it's been energized. It's had this little nudge maybe that it needed, that having this feeling like I did have this face-to-face or this personal experience of meeting Jesus and hearing him speak clearly. It's given me a little bit of a push into, you know, that my life is purposeful. I can struggle with that. That's one of the things I struggle with is thinking about, well, what's the meaning of my life? What am I doing? So it's inspired me to focus on that God has kept me here for a reason. And so I'm just seeking God in that. It's made like worship times more real, I guess, the experience. And prayer times have felt more real. It's hard to explain, really hard to give it another word than real.
Definitely. Yeah. What about for Alexa as well? Has this sort of, because I listen to you and it is really encouraging to hear you speak about this and like in certain ways really inspiring. I imagine for Alexa, it must have been, it's almost like a separate experience, isn't it? It's just it's a different perspective that just entails a completely different set of emotions to the ones that you had as the person going through it. Does she feel that sort of same way that she's, has it affected her kind of, I know you can't speak for her, but her view of life or purpose and things like that?
As far as I can tell, like the whole time she was very encouraging and she would be reassuring me in God's sovereignty and I think reassuring herself in the same thing. So, I mean, that was reassuring as well. So
yeah,
I think, so things like when I've come home, she said that, you know, I wasn't worried about finances. I wasn't worried about these kind of things. I just, one, I wanted you to be okay, but two, I just knew that God was in control. So it's encouraging to hear her say that things. I think that's a big personal journey for her as well. I think she leans more on the worry side.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think since coming home and the adrenaline maybe has worn off a little bit, it's, again, we're having to remind each other a bit more frequently that we're not quite in the moment now. So we're having to remind each other that, you know, God is still in control, even in the normal, everyday life, not just in these.
In the extreme circumstances, yeah.
It was very commendable how Alexa was in, when we arrived at least. You know, it was a really, really distressing situation and she was commendably calm. And what was really different, I guess, to every other situation is that all the people involved around it were Christians. And so your mum and dad turned up, Joel's mum and dad turned up, and so they were looking after the kids a bit. So we're all kind of there. And then finally, because you were being worked on out in the street, and then you went off in an ambulance. And it was just really nice is a very inadequate word. It was great to be able to pray. So we prayed. So there's me, Caroline, Alexa, your mum and dad, all in the front room. We made the kids sit down, and when we prayed about it, and that's just different, isn't it? Where from someone who has no faith, no hope, that even though it was really serious, no one quite knew what was going to happen, there was a great sort of calmness that we could pray, commit it to the Lord, know that he's sovereign, know that he can rescue you, he can choose not to, and you know, that's where the it counts, our faith, where it means something, when you're kind of in that moment. So just to commend Alexa particularly for her calmness, but also it was a great moment of fellowship.
How encouraging, though, to hear how the Lord has answered those prayers, you know, that Joel wakes up and actually knows the very things that you were praying, in one sense, the peace, God's sovereignty, God's in control, the comfort that actually having a heavenly Father who knows all things, is in control of all things, is at work in this time. You know, like the Psalm 139, he truly does know us and he truly does walk with us in these moments. You know, to be able to hear that in such a crisis time actually just shows that the reality of the Christian faith, you know, in these moments of how it actually comes out and lives out. That you're able to talk of not anxious or worried about all that could be going on, but there's a peace, you know, that transcends understanding.
Yeah, and obviously people who are not Christians can be calm in crisis. It's not like we're the only ones who can be, but I suppose it's being calm in crisis with some substance to it, where you do know that God's in control rather than just faith. Being resolute.
Well, it's not fatalism, is it? You could have that kind of, oh, well, I just, you know, whatever, que sera, sera kind of thing. Whereas actually Joel's hope was actually... there's a peace. I'm trusting my Heavenly Father to do what is right and good at this time. And this not yet, but I'll trust that the next day may be whatever that will bring. And that's the difference, isn't it? It's the trust in who we place at that moment.
Yeah, I think so. It was rooted in something deep, like even talking to some of the patients or people afterwards who are non-believers, like some of them were calm, some of them weren't calm. And but their whole trust was in the NHS or in the doctors and the nurses, and to me that started to make me afraid that if my trust was in these people, then what do I have?
No, that's really interesting. Yeah,
it's fascinating. Joel, just to round the sort of story off, because we haven't got loads of time left. Sort of, where are you at now? Like, I think it'd be good to just give people a sort of ending, or at least keep them up to date. So you were fitted with like a kind of a pacemaker, is that right?
Yeah, so it's called an SICD. So it's basically a defibrillator, a small defibrillator that's now placed in my side. So it's not, so a pacemaker will pace your heart, whereas this will literally sit there until my heart, unless my heart goes into another weird rhythm like this. And it will shock me, and which is, I'm told, is like being kicked in the chest by a horse.
That's exciting.
Yeah, so I don't really want that to go off, but it's there as kind of a precaution because I don't really know what's wrong. So I'm taking like beta blockers as well, just as a precaution.
Okay. And how can we pray for you as a church family or people who don't even know you who are listening? Is there any kind of request for prayer that you would like people to pray?
Yeah, I mean to steal old John Piper's thing of like, don't waste your cancer. I don't want to waste this experience. I mean it's something that happened really quickly and now I feel no kind of repercussions of it other than having this little device in my side, which is a bit uncomfortable. But I have a scar to remind me, but I don't want to forget it. I don't want to forget the experience and I don't want to waste it. So. It's very quick, easy to go back into routine. So I don't want to lose that trust I found in God. I want to carry that into everyday life. So prayer for that and prayer for the family that we won't worry about any kind of future.
Mm. Definitely. Yeah, that's great. Joel, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joel.
I'm super happy that you're still around, even though I trust God with your life. I'm glad that you're still here and glad that you could come and bless us today with this podcast. If you have questions for Joel, I'm sure you can just email them to ordinary@cch.org.uk and we can hand those on and he can reply to those. But for now, that's probably it. So thank you very much, Joel.
Cheers, Joel.
Enjoy your holiday.
Thank you very much. Thank you, I will.
Thanks for joining us for another episode. Do come back next week for the final episode before we take a little bit of a break over August. We'll be talking about rights. See you next time.